Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the February 11th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arthur Village Board. Wages joins PD board to sell unused piano by Ariana Cherry. The Arthur Village Board opened its February 2nd meeting by expressing appreciation for the village's Public Works Department for its snow removal efforts following recent winter weather. Board members also recognized additional assistance from Kurt Hall, J.J. Carter, and Nolan Lee, noting their help contributed to keeping streets and public areas cleared. With few individual reports offered and one member absent due to illness, the board moved swiftly through the night's agenda. In the absence of Chief Elliot Tinnen, the board approved a motion to hire Hoyt Wages as a part-time officer. The board approved a motion allowing the police committee to handle hiring at an established rate wage, and the board's absence with any unusual pay considerations to return to the full board for review. Board members noted that Wages would be sworn in at their next board meeting when Chief Tinnen was present. Also presented on the agenda was Ordinance 0202A-2026, addressing a Yamaha M45 OTA upright piano and its matching bench that has been housed in the community room but has reportedly gone unused in recent years. The piano was purchased by the community in 2002 for approximately $3,000 and remains a quality instrument. While some discussion included the possibility of retaining the piano for future use, several members indicated the musical events in the facility are more likely to involve portable or electronic keyboards. Others recalled that the instrument had previously been used during senior gatherings many years ago. Rather than discarding the piano, consensus leaned toward exploring resale or wholesale value options. A vote was taken to proceed with the surplus designation. During general discussion, members also raised the topic of sidewalk snow removal during larger winter events. Suggestion included evaluating current equipment capabilities and potentially upgrading or modifying machinery to better handle sidewalk clearing in high-traffic pedestrian areas, including routes near schools and main streets. Before adjournment, a brief community reminders were shared, including an upcoming EMT Chili Supper fundraiser scheduled for February 7th. The next article is from the Newman City Council. City seeks help for dealing with blight by Nolan Morse. Talks concerning a possible partnership with Land Bank Authority were proposed to the Newman City Council Monday night. The partnership would be in regard to the derelict property problems facing Newman. In the deal, LBA would provide access to lawyers, contractors, and their knowledge base to find the best possible solution for each individual property. After a drive-by evaluation completed by LBA, the Newman Council would have to vote on the partnership, where it would be taken on the LDA board, where they decide if they wish to take on Newman or not. If accepted, Newman will have to pay $10,000 a year to keep the partnership. LBA would then advise on each property if it should be renovated or demolished with the help of the city sell the land and find contractors and back the city legally. All council members voted to move forward with LBA except Bill Benner, who declined comment about his nay vote. Erica Burris, head of the Newman 4th of July ceremony, provided updates to the council. She stated fireworks were being planned, food trucks and music had been booked, and the date of June 20th was set for the ceremony. Burris also spoke about possible festivities such as a tractor pull and a 5K run, although neither were confirmed. Funds for the festival were estimated to be about $6,700. Justin Smith proposed replacing the Newman baseball diamond scoreboard among an overall presentation about the Little League program. Smith estimated the new scoreboard would cost about $5,400, but heavily advertised the idea due to Newman hosting tournaments in that field. Overall, Smith stated that Little League was very strong, seeing participation increase by over 70 kids since 2021. He attributed the success to multiple factors, including growing families, better cooperation between Shiloh, Oakland, and Kansas schools, and caring coaches, among other things. The council voted on charging nonprofit organizations an hourly rate of $1 to rent out the community center. Every member voted yes, beside Bill Benner, who declined comment about the nay vote. The next article is from the Arcola City Council. Consultant provides training to officials by David Porter. The Arcola City Council traded its regular meeting Monday for a training retreat. Scott Smith of Arndt Municipal Support Incorporated led the council through the meeting, explaining the role of the alderman and mayor versus the role of the city administrator. He explained the role of the elected officials as policymakers and administrator as the person who implements policy. That's what you pay him for. Let him do his job. He compared government business to air traffic control. If two planes are going in different directions and they don't communicate with each other, they're going to crash, he said. He said the elected officials stay in the lane. He said Arcola is lucky to have a city administrator with a master's degree and added that he has the power papers on his wall showing that he is an expert on managing the city's affairs. The elected official should be involved, he said, both in the community and at the council table, but their role is to provide ideas and direction and to be cheerleaders for the community. He said the council members should come prepared to meetings, be ready to make decisions, vote on all matters, attend the meetings, work on long-range planning, and be present in the community. They should not focus on daily operations, he said. He stressed that the elected official should avoid interacting with city staff. As individuals, they do not have the authority to make staff-level decisions and open themselves up to personal liability if they intervene with the city business. If they have a concern with a city employee, Smith said they should address it with the city administrator and let him handle it. He said the mayor should be the face of the city and acknowledged that Mayor Jesus Garza does that. I don't have the time, but I make time for my community, Garza said. He said he has a good team of employees at his business, which allows him to play a bigger role in community events. Garza has long had a big impact in creating programs for kids, developing the plaza next to the Broom Palace, and promoting the city's Hispanic culture. Best practices for the city administrator, Smith said, is to bring good recommendations to the council, keep the entire council informed, handle personnel issues, and give clear directions on assignments. Smith is a former city manager in Charleston. The training program is ongoing. The next article is from the Tuscola City Council, Broke Breaker Cheaper to Replace Than to Fix, by David Porter. The Tuscola City Council approved a new breaker attachment for its Bobcat skid steer Monday night at a cost of $6,900. City Administrator Drew Howell said the estimates to repair the old attachment, which broke last week, were over $7,000. He said the part that has ongoing maintenance issues and broke during a late-night water leak when the temperature was cold and the ground was hard. The only other business Monday beside the consent agenda was an ordinance to cede its private development bonding authority to the Eastern Illinois Economic Development Authority. It is something the city does annually. As a home rule city, Tuscola can issue up to $628,000 in tax-exempt bonds for private development. The city considers that amount small for development purposes. By turning it over to EIEDA, it is combined with other bonding amounts to be used for larger development projects within the region, including potential projects in and around Tuscola. In the consent agenda, the city approved a Forest Glen street closure March 28th for the Kiwanis Easter egg hunt. Rain date is April 4th. Community building leases with alcohol were issued to Becky's Buddies for Glow Bingo on April 17th, Tuscola Women's Club for a trivia night March 13th, and Douglas County Ducks Unlimited for a banquet on February 27th. Also approved were a payment of $123,000 to AKRA Builders for pool house renovations and $16,000 to Swindeman Incorporated for the new AV system at the community building. That amount was $1,200 higher than previously approved due to additional equipment needed that was not anticipated. And the last first page story, continuing the tradition, Lydia Manzella joins Army Reserves, by Nolan Morse. Coming from military lineage, Lydia Manzella was set on becoming the newest link in her family's chain, and she wasn't going to let anything get in her way. Her mother, J.C. Meyer Manzella, described her as a naturally protective ever since she was small. Lydia's father, Mike Manzella, said she picked up lots of military awareness, constantly shifting her eyes, knowing everything about her environment. It was no surprise to those who know Lydia that she made a decision to join the Army Reserves. Leaving for basic training June 30th, Lydia has known for years that this is something she wanted to do. Being inspired by shows like MASH and other military media at a young age, wanting to continue her family's long line of serving their country, and simply wanting to prove she could do it, Lydia gave herself every reason to go for it and never looked back. Although completely supportive, Lydia's mom was taken a little off guard at the start. She told the story, saying Lydia just walked in from school one day and casually threw out there that they had a meeting with a recruiter. Working in the shadows, Lydia set everything up herself, wanting this journey to be a reflection of her own hard work and hers alone. When talking about the environment she's experienced in the reserves thus far, Lydia said everyone has been amazing, describing it as a group of supportive people all pushing themselves toward one common goal without judgment. Lydia chose to go to the culinary, something that she's been familiar with her entire life. This always follows an important rule her father, a veteran himself, put in place, saying she can go wherever she wants as long as she doesn't join combat. Looking forward to what she's most excited about, Lydia answered the change of scenery, saying she's lived in Tuscola her entire life and cannot wait to travel and experience different surroundings. While in the reserves, Lydia will also be a student at Indiana University, where she looks to pursue a business degree on top of everything she learns from the military. Both parents could not express how proud they were of their daughter and said with complete confidence, no matter what Lydia trained to accomplish, they are zero doubts that she will be successful. We'll move now to the obituaries. Richard Lee Mathias, 74 of Arcola, passed away peacefully at home February 6, 2026, surrounded by his loving family and his dog Floyd. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday, February 14th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Memorial service will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Sunday, February 15th at the funeral home. Pastor Brandon Wright will officiate. Burial will be in the Arcola Cemetery. Trevor Tagman Gibson, 31 of Arthur, passed away at 11:07 a.m. on Monday, February 2nd, 2026 at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation was held Thursday, February 5th at Penn Station, Arthur. Funeral services were held Friday, February 6th at Penn Station. The Reverend Doug Davis officiated. Burial was in the Arthur Cemetery. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted the family. Raymond T. Uthi, 89 of Tuscola, passed away on Saturday, January 31st, 2026 at his home. Visitation was held Thursday, February 5th at Joynes Funeral Home in Villa Grove. Funeral services were held February 6th at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Tuscola, with the short visitation being held an hour prior. Pastor Jason Bratton and Pastor Kevin Werner officiated. The next article, Nightly Reading, a Family Literacy Event. This week, CUSD number 305 launched its 7th annual district-wide book club, Nightly Reading, a Family Literacy Event. The youngest household member of the K through 5 grade students all across the district received a copy of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. This is the second book in C.S. Lewis's classic fantasy series, The Chronicles of Narnia, which has captivated readers of all ages with a magical land and unforgettable characters for over 75 years. This year's program allows for 4 weeks of reading enjoyment for students and families, and there are plenty of activities planned at school to enrich the reading experience. To kick off the literacy program, students step through the wardrobe to enter a world of imagination, aka the library. They received their books and learned about some upcoming activities, including a daily hunt for the hidden lamppost, trivia questions to earn Turkish delight, and a class-created magical journal. Reading aloud at home is valuable because it better prepares children to be effective readers, but it is also a fun, worthwhile family members' activity. With a nightly reading program, we aim to build a community of readers at the schools in our district. Additional copies of the books are available upon request from the school. This program has been made possible in part by the District No. 305 Education Fund and prepared by the nightly reading team of Chrissy Patterson, Title I AGAHGS, Lindsay Herring, Library Aide, AGAHGS, Jennifer Schrock, Library Aide, AGS, Madeline Groom, Pre-K Teacher, AGS, Jennifer Kinney, Paraprofessional, AGS, Amy Tigg, Math Professor, LGS, and Renee Brown, District Librarian. The next article, 100 People Who Care Holds Annual Shareholders Meeting in Arthur, by Marty Yeagle. The fundraising arm of the District No. 305 Education Foundation, 100 People Who Care, held a meeting of shareholders on Monday, February 2nd at Los Gallos Restaurant in downtown Arthur. Danny Powell and Marty Yeagle represented Education Foundation and both shared some words as to what the purpose of the foundation is and what the group does in supporting our schools and teachers. Also present were three teachers who were recent recipients of grants given by the Education Foundation for assistance in their classrooms. Emma McLean shared how she used the money to buy books for her 6th grade English and Language Arts junior high classroom to encourage reading among her students. They have a goal to read 100 books this semester and are already well on their way to reaching that in just 1 month, thanks to the library she's been able to build. Stephanie Alexander, who teaches art at the grade school to all grades, kindergarten through 8th grade, also used her grant money to buy how to draw books, which she said her kids really enjoy. Much-needed art supplies, which are not in the school budget, were also purchased with her grant money. Ginger Vogel, who is the ALAH High School Family and Consumer Science teacher, think home ec, used her money to purchase air fryers and can openers for her classroom's kitchens and the high school food pantry. She went on to explain that the food pantry at the high school is available to all students who request it. Those at the meeting were very interested to learn how these teachers use the money granted to them and also a bit about the needs of the schools and the students. District No. 305 Education Foundation awarded almost $7,300 last spring to 14 teachers for items like those mentioned above, as well as many other needed supplies for their classroom. If interested in helping in our schools, you may become a member of the 100 People Who Care, which asks that you contribute $200 per school year, or you can just contribute to the Education Foundation. The website for the Education Foundation can be found at u-knight-ed.org, and both the Foundation and 100 People Who Care have their own Facebook page. For more information about the food pantry at the high school and the backpack program and how you can help with those, contact ALAH High School at 217-543-2511 or the grade school at 217-543-2109. The next article, Arthur Rotary Hears from Exchange Student by Marty Yackel. The Arthur Rotary Club held its weekly luncheon meeting at Yoder's Kitchen on Thursday, February 5th. Kevin Huffman opened the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance and invocation and introduced guests Mac and Ginny Condell, Vicky Weger, Ricky Weger, Parker, Jean Weger, Kelsey Pruitt, and Marty Yackel. After the meal, the group was able to FaceTime Cohen Condell, who is a Rotary-sponsored youth exchange student in Brazil and the son of Mac and Ginny Condell. We learned a bit about his life in Brazil, how school is going, and what subjects he likes and doesn't, and they expected the food to be spicier. Also, the two families he's been with so far have been amazing and so good to him, according to his parents, who are very appreciative of that. Cohen will be home in June and will begin his junior year at Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond this fall. A reminder that families are needed for if anyone is interested in hosting an exchange student this coming year. Send an email to arthurrotary@gmail.com or contact any Rotarian for more information. The next guest was Ricky Weger Parker, daughter of Ricky and Vicky Weger, and granddaughter of Jean. Ricky is the director of the Children's Museum of Illinois, located in Decatur, and a 2005 graduate of Arthur High School. She's been given the opportunity through her work at the museum, to partner with local libraries to fill educational gaps using specific outdoor play spaces. The title of the project is Playful Learning Landscapes, and Ricky has been approached by the Arthur Public Library for their undertaking. The final design of the outdoor play structure will be a joint collaboration between the Children's Museum and the Arthur Library, the purpose of which will be largely to build early math skills as the main goal, but other learning opportunities will be incorporated as well. The design includes, according to the information Ricky presented at the library board, areas for families to gather, counting and matching games, checkers that double as stacking toys, and a playful snail. In memory of the late Dave Camp, there will also be an area called Dave's Camp. In honor of the legacy, musical background elements will be integrated into the space. Donor recognition will be contained in the fencing. The library board was very pleased when Ricky brought this proposal to them, and they feel it will be a great addition to what their library offers. The total cost of the project is about $50,000. Donations have been received from the Heart of Illinois Foundation, and the Arthur Rotary Club has very generously donated $5,000 toward the project. Rotary is a service club and feels it's important to give back to the community with projects like this one at the library. Other grant requests are in the works, and if anyone would care to donate through this effort, contact Kelsey Pruitt, Library Director at 217-543-2037, or just stop by the library for more information. A rendering of the playground is available on the library website at arthurlibrary.org. More information will be shared on Facebook and in paper as plans for the Learning Center progress. Next article is Ramblin' Man Dave Porter talking about fun puns and bad bunnies. Sometimes I like to take on the really difficult topics, so today I want to talk about trigonometry, calculus, and understanding women. One difficulty in addressing these difficult topics is that I don't really know anything about them. Another is that I don't really care about the first two. I've lived more than 60 years and have never needed advanced math. Maybe a little algebra, but that last topic, I'm sure I could have used a little more information on that one. I won't try to shed any light on it. That would be like asking a monkey to perform brain surgery. I could poke around in there, but nothing good would come of it. So instead, let's talk about feathers, because I want to keep it light. I could go deeper and talk about holes. Here's a question. How many puns can the average reader endure? We're about to find out. Except none of my readers are average. They're all exceptional. Unlike me, I'm not extraordinary. I'm just extraordinary. Oh, it's going to get worse before it gets better. I am for 500 words, and yet I'm not even halfway there yet. I saw online that some local people aren't too happy that the new garbage haul are in town, but I don't like to trash talk. I'm more of a soap suds kind of guy. I like to keep it clean. I guess there was a football game Sunday, but that's like calculus and trigonometry to me. Not that it's difficult to understand, just useless to me. The only Super Bowl I'm interested in is one filled with popcorn. That leaves us with the weather for small talk. Still cold outside? Yep, still cold. I'm over it. How about you? I like the seasons, including snow, but it's time to move on. Wait, are we talking about politics? We had a little politics in the Super Bowl over the halftime show. Seems like some people forget that Puerto Ricans are Americans, too. I'm not being political here. When people object to having Bad Bunny perform at halftime because they think it should be an American singer, they're just wrong. Personally, I don't like Bad Bunny because he eats the leaves off the weeping willow sprig in my backyard. You can say you don't like Senor Bunny's style of music. You can say you don't like that he sings in Spanish. But if you say he shouldn't be there because it should be an American performer, that's just dumb. We didn't hear any outrage over Shania Twain when she performed. She's Canadian. Or the Rolling Stones, or Paul McCartney, or Sting, or Phil Collins, Rihanna, Coldplay, Shakira, U2, Celine Dion, The Who, all of them have performed at Super Bowl halftimes, and none of them are Americans. Yet Bad Bunny is. Makes you wonder what the real deal is. Slipped a little non-pun fun in there. I'll get letters. I don't mind. The occasional thread is a little over the top, but it's telling in its intolerance. Hey, it was either a little political banter or more bad puns, and if you can't endure either one, I don't know what to tell you. Well, we made it to the 500 mark, so I'll stop here. See, I told you I'd get better. And the next column is I'm Just Saying by Mike Carroll, Stranger in a Strange Land. For the last decade, I felt like George Lonesome George Goebel, a homespun folksy comedian in the mid to late 20th century, famous for his droll self-mockery and rambling digressions. Whenever he found himself among famous people, his self-mockery included lines like, "Do you ever get the feeling that the world was a tuxedo and you were a pair of brown shoes?" And another one, "Did you ever feel like the whole world's a freeway and you're the off-ramp?" Given the current state of our national politics, I feel like Lonesome George, discombobulated, an outsider, a stranger in a strange land. As a political science college major with a career in politics, I naturally developed certain foundational values and presumptions and ideology, but not so much as I'm going to be closed-minded purist. I'm also a pragmatist accepting reality. Over time, I came down on the side of being a conservative to moderate Republican in the new, now abandoned, fashion of Governor Jim Edgar and presidents like Eisenhower, Ford, Reagan, and the Bushes. Which is to say, I'm now considered a rhino, Republican in name only, driven from the ranks like many moderates in the party, just like many admirable Democratic moderates, think Senators Manchin, Sinema, and Lieberman, who've been shoved out the door as dinos to become independents. Which is to say further, that I now, at least for the national politics, consider myself part of the largest political group in America, an independent, large because I don't find my values and presumptions coherently or consistently reflected in either party. It wasn't supposed to be this way. The two extreme wings of our two political parties purging their moderates and gridlocking the country. Our founding fathers never imagined any political parties with Washington warning against the baneful effects of a spirit of a party, viewing political parties as dangerous to national unity. However, for various reasons, we developed two parties. One apparent secret to the other enduring power was that it was functionally a four-party system, with each party having two wings. Generally speaking, for years, the Democrats had two wings, the liberal, big city, mostly northern wing, so-called fiscally liberal, and the conservative, blue dog, mostly southern wing, fiscally conservative and more socially conservative. The Republican wings were the moderate to liberal wing, usually urban and northern, social liberal and fiscally moderate, and the conservative wing, usually small town, middle America, fiscally conservative and more socially conservative. The beauty of this four-part structure was that for almost any issue, three out of the four wings were, if not happy, at least not angry. Compromise was often easy. Today, we seem to have two parties without counterbalancing wings, progressive Democrats, socially and fiscally liberal, and conservative Republicans, socially and fiscally conservative. Compromise is more difficult. Lose the great middle, moderating wings as now, and you'll see the effects of a divided, angry, radical political ruling class, where it's considered political suicide to even talk to the other party or dare compromise. Today, polls show the great moderate middle of independents has swelled to 45% of the voters, with Democrats and Republicans sharing about 27% each. The rise of independents has steadily increased from 33% when Pew first started tracking the numbers in 1988. This makes one think independent candidates should sweep national elections, but despite recent attempts, it hasn't happened. Reasons are many and include gerrymandering, safe political districts, and incentive stream extremism, the big money of powerful interests. Plus, let's face it, when moderate people start talking rationally and calmly, it's like watching paint dry. Both our dying legacy media and our new wave podcasters and other digital platforms, financially fed on our lesser angels, anger, violence, controversy, unvetted conspiracy theories, and fake news from both parties. What to do? I'm looking for candidates from either party who are open-minded, willing to listen to opposing viewpoints, willing to compromise, and independent enough to at least occasionally buck their party and put moral conscience first. One curl local current congressional race represents just such an opportunity in our 15th district. Representative Mary Miller consistently wins this heavily gerrymandered district as a committed loyalist to her party in the administration. Judy Bowlby is challenging her on the upcoming Republican primary. I've talked to her, and she considers herself a conservative Republican, but by the old definition of moderate leaders, such as Illinois' Governor Edgar. The Chicago Tribune recently endorsed Bowlby over Miller, saying, "What really stood out to us is her desire to build bridges as a means of restoring trust in democracy and faith institutions. Where Miller walks in lockstep with Trump, Bowlby is more independent-minded and moderate. She clearly understands the district, with an emphasis on agriculture and focus on kitchen-table economic issues. Refreshing. Whatever happens, the fact is candidates like Bowlby are emerging and try to reestablishing the moderate middle that has been hollowed out by extreme ideology in both parties. I applaud the trend, as I think we need to start demanding our politicians to talk to each other, decently, without demagoguery, and listening with the same fair-minded civility. The fact is, every experience, life situation, or ideology presents something true and reflective of our complicated social fabric that demands accommodation by our still-unfolding grand experiment in democratic self-government. The necessary reconciliation of genuine national differences cannot be resolved by zealots playing juvenile gotcha games. The moment demands reasonable, fair-minded people who are able to withstand strong intimidation to forfeit their independent mind. It seems time to turn our great ship of state into more moderate, civil winds, away from dangerous shoals and into deeper, safer, temperate waters." The next article, "Be True to Your School, Hook, Line, and Sinker" by Tony Hooker. "We're loyal to you, VG High. We're old gold and blue, VG High. We'll back you to stand against the best in the land. You're what we have sand, VG High. Last weekend, I had the pleasure and privilege of emceeing the annual PTO Glow Bingo fundraiser, and several things readily became apparent. First, don't ever play modern lyrics trivia with Lauren Wendling. I think I could hold my own in 80s music, but I have no choice with the songs recorded in the 21st century. This girl is a living jukebox. Second, and possibly related to my first point, VG teachers and parents know how to have a good time. There are faces painted with fluorescent daubers and the world's longest globe bracelet chain, photos of fire extinguishers, don't ask, that happens at Globe Bingos, stays at Globe Bingos, and what appears to be 5-course meal at one particular table near the front. As I roamed around the room, the smiles and genuine enjoyment of each other's company were apparent at every table. Finally, the most importantly, I was struck once again by the dedication and support of families and staff and families of Villa Grove Schools. I'm sure either town can have the same feeling of pride in their institutions, but since Villa Grove has been my only elementary school or high school association since I started kindergarten in 1968, it's the only one I can reference and always was amazed. The hall at the VFW was standing room only, as always. In fact, extra chairs had to be drug in to accommodate the overflow crowds. No matter what the event, it seemed like Villa Grove shows out support, especially for our school, the city's businesses, who are hit up constantly for financial support by all sorts of community organizations, still found it within themselves to donate graciously. I know they get solicited a lot because I'm selling raffle tickets for the Sacred Heart Fish Fry in a couple of weeks, and many of the same businesses are listed as donors for that event. The symbiosis between the schools, churches, and organization and the town's businesses can't be overstated. We can't do it without each other, and local proprietors always seem to step up to the plate. I'm told that over $4,000 was raised last Saturday, and for that, all involved should feel proud. I think that anything we can do to make teachers' lives easier is worth the effort. I don't have any data to back my assertion, but it seems like it's tougher to be a teacher or administrator now than it has ever been. I grew up in the days when every principal had a board of education hanging in their office, and it was amazing how quickly the connection between the backside and the brain could be reached when necessary. Teachers and administrators face a maze of paperwork these days, and I don't think existed back in the day. Sometimes I wonder if the simpler times of my youth weren't better times, but like disco, I sincerely hope they're not coming back. So I tip my hat to those who have chosen to be educators. You have my respect and my support. And we have time for a few briefs. Arthur School District office relocates. The superintendent's office, which has been traditionally located in the high school, has now moved to a new location. The office is now located at 302 East Progress Street in Arthur. The half front of the building is occupied by U of I extension offices, and the school offices are located in the back half of the building. As you pull into the parking lot, drive all the way to the north end of the parking lot, and their door is located at the very end of the parking lot. The district phone number remains the same, 217-543-2511. Simply Arthur offers low-interest loans. Business professionals in the Arthur area are being reminded of the availability of low-interest loans via a revolving loan fund from Simply Arthur. They currently have $69,000 to loan for business needs. These funds may only be used to help small businesses maintain or add jobs to their business. If you have a need for funding, please call Andy Parsons, 217-458-1813. That is all the time we have this week. This is Chris Yerge saying goodbye, and see you again next week.